future lay out there in the bullpen.
This is the bullpen.
Squad, bullpen, now.
Who let those guys up here?
Well, well, well. How the turntables.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Go ahead, call the producers.
Welcome in to the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I am Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. We are here with you till 7 o'clock, leading into Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis. You got BMAC behind the glass on Twitter at SackByBMAC. Of course, we'll talk some Texans. We're going to introduce a new segment we're going to do on Tuesdays, Hot Seat Watch. Who's on the hot seat? How hot is it? We're going to have a bunch of options to choose from. D'Amico Ryans has to be on that list of options just because, you know, the Texans like to fire coaches after 1 year. He's going to be low on the list of how hot his seat is, but just because they like to fire people, we're going to include him in on it. But of course, we have to talk about the Astros. What a disaster last night. What an absolute disaster. Your offense finally does something. Justin Verlander's pretty good. Like, he's not great, but he gets a quality start. It is one of the most, I think, overrated things that we attribute to starting pitchers in all of sports right now. Because you're still getting up three runs. I think I've heard you talk about this, BMAC. It's like a 4-5 ERA or something like that, even if they just get a
six innings, three earned runs is a 4.50 ERA. We would never call that quality.
It's not great. But we've deemed it quality because of a journalist in, like, I think it's like Kansas City came up with it. I heard the Astros broadcast talking about it one time, where it's like he deemed it a quality start, and then it just took off from there.
Like, the idea of it is you kept your team in the game. And with that, I can agree. Like, six innings, three earned runs, you definitely kept your team in the game. But to actually title it as a quality...
It's tough.
Yeah, it's got to be sub three. So to me, it should be like seven innings, three runs or less. Your ERA, I believe I looked this up once, it'd be 3.86.
That's pretty good.
That I view as quality.
Yeah, I think that's...
But six innings, three earned runs, like, you wouldn't look at a guy with a 4.50 ERA and like, man, that guy's quality.
Yeah, I agree. But Justin Verlander, solid last night. The lineup, pretty good. When you needed them the most, when you need Kyle Tucker the most, he had a chopper and Jake Myers didn't run home. But of course, the big story out of the game last night was Rafael Montero, Ryan Pressly. Disaster ball. Like, everything about that game last night, it was yours to win. You're playing obviously the number one seed in the American League. You kind of have the opportunity at this point to flip the script on the playoffs and really give the Tampa Bay Rays a chance to take over that one seed. Frankly, I don't really want that. Like, if the Astros are going to go back to the ALCS this year, I would rather go through Baltimore than through Tampa Bay at this point. But last night's game continues the trend that Dusty Baker has talked about all season, that I've talked about multiple times since we've really started this show. It's the fact that they do not play a complete game of baseball. Like, the Astros, it's like they're allergic to it. They don't have the ability to have a quality start, good offense, and good bullpen. They are not able to do that, and they keep saying, I heard Dusty Baker say it again in the last 24 hours. We have a run in us. I don't buy it. Like, I'm at the point now where, like, I don't think I buy it anymore. I'm going to talk out both sides of my mouth right now. Yesterday on this show, I said, I still believe the Astros are going to go to the World Series. I want to still believe that. But then things like that happened last night that are just a complete disaster, and they can't play a complete game of baseball. And I don't understand, because you go back to Saturday. You know, they're down against the Royals. They don't get a good start from JP France. They're coming all the way back. Jose Altuve hits a rope off the foul pole, ties the game, and then it falls apart. Last night, same thing. They have a lead versus the Orioles. It's back and forth. It's an awesome baseball game. But when you need it most, your team fails in the bullpen, and you have a runner on third base and a guy who's probably going to finish second MVP in the American League in Kyle Tucker. And he hits this little chopper to first base, and he can't even get the ball to the infield. Like, when you need it the most, they have failed time and time again. I still believe, but these guys are exhausting this year.
It's tough because if I'm looking for optimism, I think we all are looking for optimism at this point, it's specifically with the bullpen and Ryan Pressly. Ryan Pressly went through a really rough stretch. I think it was May and June of last season, culminating in a game against the Yankees in Yankee Stadium where he coughed up a couple leads. And then right after that, what happened? He went on like a franchise record-setting, like 27 consecutive outings without giving up a run. So there's reason to show there with Pressly that he's had these moments before and is capable of turning around. Obviously, they're running out of time for him to turn around. But it's happened before. And then specifically with like the order of when guys come in the bullpen, we've seen Dusty do this before where, I mean, Abreu didn't start last season, you know, high up in the leverage situations that he would come in, and he made that change. Montero struggled begin this year, and he moved him way down to the fifth inning for a long time. Maybe he needs to move back down. But the combination of Pressly showing the ability to get out of this before and Dusty, like he's stubborn, but he has moved these bullpen pieces around before, leaves me with a little confidence left that they can get at least the bullpen figured out.
Interesting text here from 1317. Can we just not say they lost a tight game against a really good team? Let's say they win the next two games and take the series still looking good. You're right. That's fair, 1317. My counter, they gained ground over the last couple days in the division by losing the series against the A's and the Royals only because the Rangers and the Mariners are playing worse baseball than you. Like, they have done nothing. The Astros, in fact, have made it harder to make the playoffs on themselves than anything else. Like, the division race is tight, but also the Toronto Blue Jays are playing very good baseball. The third-place team in the American League West is not going to make the playoffs. 2 weeks ago, it did not feel that way. 2 weeks ago, the Rangers took care of the Blue Jays. The Blue Jays were 3.5 games out of the last wild card spot, and it looked like three teams from the American League West were going to make the playoffs. It is no longer going to be that. The Blue Jays are likely going to be in, and if the Astros were to falter and continue to falter, like, there's a chance they will miss the playoffs. There's a chance they will win the division.
Now, the odds market would tell you there's still like 90-plus percent to make the playoffs. Are you not believing that at all, or are you maybe hedging your happiness with a little bit of wager on the other side with the odds being that good for the Astros?
I think that I get, like, why Fangraphs and the odds would tell you that the Astros still have a 90-plus percent chance, but to me, it's really simple. It's going to come down, I think, to three games. If they get dominated by the Rangers, it's over. Now, the Rangers and the Mariners will have a conversation about that, and we'll have a say in that.
Well, I'm sorry. They don't have a series remaining against
the
Rangers.
Sorry, I meant the Mariners.
Okay.
The three games left versus the Mariners. The Rangers and the Mariners play seven times in that final 10-game stretch. I guess that starts on Thursday or Friday.
Yeah, they play, I think, a three-game series this weekend.
So if that series goes wonky and, like, the Rangers win six of the seven or vice versa with the Mariners, like, it will help the Astros a ton. But that series that the Mariners have versus the Astros is going to be massive now, because the way this division's playing out, you can't. I get where the texter's coming from, that, like, can't you just say they lost a tight game? I get it. But the problem is that when you played bad teams, you didn't play well. Like, you played really, really poor.
Yeah, and you'd be more willing to take that point of view if you hadn't lost four out of six of the A's and the Royals. Especially since you now, like, you're talking about competing with three other teams for these last couple spots, the Rangers, the Mariners, and the Blue Jays. Two of those three teams have the tiebreaker over you.
Yes, that's also a huge factor.
That's the most concerning part. Like, I mean, you want the Rangers to go on a little bit of a win streak here because that would help you against the Mariners. Obviously, you lose the tiebreaker to the Mariners, and you also lose the tiebreaker to the Blue Jays. So the one team that you do control it with, the Rangers, is the team. I mean, it sucks to root for the Rangers right now as an Astros fan, but you do need to root for the Rangers to knock the Mariners out of this.
Yeah, and the one thing that we've gotten out of the last 2 days, too, that's been not great. I guess, you know, look, I think everyone last night wanted to see Michael Brantley play and get a pitch
hit. He's not playing again today.
He's not playing today, and they're saying he's dealing with some soreness. And it is concerning because, you know, Joel and I were just talking about this at the end of the Killer Bees, that, like, we saw him come back nearly after his first rehab stint, and it looked like Michael Brantley was going to join the team, and then all of a sudden, everything got derailed, and he was out for another month or so, had to go through another rehab stint, and he's been solid since he's been up here. He had a great play over the weekend where they got the guy out at home. If Brantley is sore, he's at the point again where I don't think, as Astros fans, you should have any expectations that he's going to contribute to this team and make a playoff push. If he does, it's awesome. It's just the expectation shouldn't be that high. The break the Astros have gotten is that it sounds like Brian Abreu is going to be available tonight after he got hit in the forearm the other day, which looked like a frightening potential injury. Because that was not pretty.
I will say with Brantley, unfortunately, because the Astros have put themselves in a situation where they're only separated from the other teams by, you know, a game and a half, Brantley's availability doesn't fit their urgency right now. Like, I mean, Brantley is one of their best nine, you know, players they would like to put out there every single day. But I think what we've seen with his first rehab or first attempt to come back with the rehab that he got sent to L.A. for and then immediately went back to Houston. And then now with these back-to-back games missed with discomfort or soreness or whatever the Astros are calling it now, what we've seen is Brantley at his age and coming off of what he's dealt with just isn't an everyday player. So down the stretch where the Astros are trying to wrap up a playoff spot, he's not going to be there every single day. And that's best case scenario. Best case scenario, he's probably playing every other day. And then even in the postseason, if you want to make a deep run and get through the World Series and we want Brantley as a part of that, you're probably not playing him in every single game of the postseason. He's going to have to miss at least every third game, I would say. Like a seven-game series, he plays three or four of them.
That's fine. Like I think that's reasonable.
That's got to be the expectation, right? We obviously we love to bash Dusty for his lineup, but he's going to have to play it smart with Brantley.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still at the point where like I'm over the Dusty Baker lineup stuff because last night once again proves that like it doesn't matter. Dusty Baker can set his lineup however he wants. It's the players who are out on the field that are not performing. It's Kyle Tucker who doesn't get Jake Meyers home when you need him most. You know, it's
Jake Meyers not taking off.
Yeah, I think I'm in the belief that Jake Meyers should have took off. If you're going to take him out, if you're going to take Yordan Alvarez out of the game, like that's the chance. Like you take the risk.
Because Yordan's not going there, but the whole reason you put him in is Jake Meyers is the type of guy that can make that play happen.
100%. Like even because you never know what's going to happen. You're going to have a rush throw. It's going to be a tough throw. Like it is worth the risk of Jake Meyers in that moment to take off, but he had a poor lead. And frankly, like I don't think he's ever been that great of a base runner. Like it's not Altuve bad of a base runner, but like Jake Meyers in that moment should have been more aggressive. But it is funny, I will say, if Jake Meyers takes off, we're crushing him today if he gets thrown at home.
Oh, that's the nature of sports talk, though.
You're
never right in that situation. If he takes off and he gets nailed at the plate, he's the dumbest base runner alive. If he doesn't take off like he did, then we're killing him for not being aggressive enough. That's just the nature of sports talk.
All right, how do you feel about the Astros? 11 games left in the season. Hunter Brown on the mound tonight versus the Orioles. But, of course, the Houston Texans. The question we talked about on the Killer Bees today was, are they a rebuild team or a win-now team? Have we set the expectations too high for the Houston Texans? And what does it take for this team to really start to put it together over the next couple weeks and the rest of the season? We hit on all that next year on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.com. You need to learn.
Let the boy watch. He needs to learn. The way I learned from my father.
This is The Bullpen, live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios. Here are the producers of ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Joe George here with you until 7 o'clock. BMAC behind the glass. Did we set the expectations too high for D'Amico Ryan, CJ Stroud, and company for the 2023 season? Look, I think I had them at 7 games, okay? I know that sounds bad now. They're 0-2.
I'm right there with you. I had them in 7 games, too. But I'm certainly backing off because the Colts, I think, was everybody's... Was only no matter how many games you had them at, the Colts was one of the ones.
Now the balancing act with that is that everyone had the Jets as a loss, and if they lose to Zach Wilson,
good point.
Like good luck, because that guy sucks. Percentage chance Zach Wilson is a starting quarterback. I think it's like week 11. It's December 10th.
Man.
It's like Zach Wilson. I don't think he's the quarterback.
I could see the Jets trading for Gardner Minshew, who looked pretty good after Anthony Richardson got hurt.
Yeah, I could like Gardner, Jameis Winston.
Yeah, I don't think Winston changes much.
I think he's better than Zach Wilson. But sure. That's such a low bar.
That's such a low bar. Yeah, I mean, you and I are barely worse than Zach Wilson. He's awful.
That guy has no idea where the ball's going.
No.
And then they decide, and then the Jets, like, they are, Robert Saleh.
You have like, Zach Wilson.
And they ran the ball like nine times.
Well, not only do you run the ball nine times, Breece Hall, who went freaking nuts in that opening week win against the Bills, just looked electrifying out there, even coming off the ACL surgery that he did. He has four carries in that game against the Cowboys. And he tweeted about it because it's 2023. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah.
He tweeted out four football emojis, .. After the game.
Todd the Show says here on Twitch, people were so jacked for the Texans when they hired DeMeco. I thought it would take till week four for the fans to turn. It took 2 weeks. Dude, I'll be honest with you. I don't think anyone has turned on DeMeco Ryans.
No, I haven't liked some of his decisions, but I haven't turned on him. I still think he's going to be a really good coach.
Yeah, DeMeco Ryans still, look, in general, I think you've seen more Texans fans than not be over the top, still confident in where this team is at. I don't agree with the notion that all of CJ Stroud's stats were in garbage time. I think it was really just like that last drive of the game, possession. But look, they were playing down, they were chasing. It's going to look different than stats versus other guys. But like overall, I think most Texans fans are still a little over irrational, I think is the way I would put it, of what they view the Texans this season. But look, the reality is it needs to get better. Because I do think that the one place this team took a major step back with was in their run game. You know, week one, I'm starting to wonder how much of it being week one of the season and what Lamar Jackson and that new offense looked like actually benefited the Texans versus it benefited the Texans and made them look better than they actually are. And the reality could be that the Texans defense isn't that much improved. And week three is really where we're going to learn what they are. Because, like, while the Kansas City Chiefs defense, like, I saw Justin Reed going out and about and tweeting, like, about how, you know, their defense was going to be improved this year, I still think Jacksonville has a pretty potent offense. I think we're going to learn a lot about who the Texans are. Are they more week one or are they more week two? Like, you're playing Trevor Lawrence, a really good quarterback. They have really solid weapons on the outside. And you have Travis Etienne in the run game. Like, they're going to be a solid team on offense. I don't think the 9 points they scored versus the Chiefs is the reality of who they are. So we're going to learn, I think, a lot about what DeMeco Ryans' defense looks like if Nick Caserio brought in players that can stop the run, or if it's going to be a long-ass season where like the only chance you have to win games is if you try to score 30-plus points. And C.J. Stroud and this team, like as good as I think they looked in week two, like they're not going to ever in this rookie year be a team that consistently scores 24, 27 points. Like, they just don't have the talent or the ability to do that right now. So, like, the Texans need the defense to be a lot better in week three.
I would say it's hard to say we'll know exactly what the Texans' defense will be this year until Jalen Petrie and Jimmy Ward are back. I mean, I know there's safeties, and safety is kind of a devalued position in the NFL, but those are two really captains of the defense, kind of quarterbacks of the defense, and especially in Petrie's case, because Jimmy Ward's a little bit older, a playmaker on the defense. So, look, they went up against Shane Steichen. Shane Steichen's a brilliant play caller. We saw what his defense or his offense did against DeMeco Ryans and the 49ers last year in the NFC Championship game. So that's a tough matchup to win. And I will say, look, we gave them a lot of flowers for how they played against the Ravens in week one, but the Ravens, kind of like the Texans, were dealing with their own offensive line problems, losing Linderbaum at one point in the game. Staley, I believe, left the game at one point. So, well, it'll be somewhere in between, but it'll be interesting to see how much will change once we see them and get some healthy offensive lines.
All right, Virginia Buttonweed on Twitch, my person who loves me the most of all of our Twitchers, says there is zero reason to believe he is a good coach. Talking about DeMeco, remember when Bill O'Brien was amazing hire and the city freaked out? Okay, look, I think that's a fair take, to be honest. Like, we don't really know what DeMeco Ryans is going to be as a head coach. Like, you bring in someone, you hope that they're going to be able to hire the right people, because that's where it starts. Like, if DeMeco Ryans fails, part of it's going to be his decision most likely to bring in Bobby Slowick. Like, there is plenty of reason to hope that DeMeco Ryans is going to be the guy. But it's the same thing if you hired Ben Johnson or Shane Steichen or any of these other like OCs and DCs that were out there. It's all built on hope. It's not built on fact, because most of the time The only, if you're going to hire a veteran NFL head coach, they've been fired for a reason. Like Doug Peterson is like 1 in 100. Someone that has won a Super Bowl, probably never should have lost their job, and now they have a good team again. Most retreads in the NFL, like, do you want Josh McDaniels? No, because you know he sucks. You don't know if D'Amico Ryans is going to be a good coach. It seems like he can be. Will we know right away? No. Is he going to be better than Lovie Smith and David Culley? Yes.
That's the Zach Wilson bar of head coaches.
Yeah, like, it's the lowest of lowest bars, but, like, I still think that, like, there is a chance D'Amico Ryans is going to be a very good coach. Todd, the show brings up a valid point. Like, if you're going to hire a coach with no experience, I would rather them hire an OC. Look, I think we all felt that way. We all wanted, at least on the Killer Bees, we all wanted Ben Johnson, the Lions offensive coordinator, to be the head coach of the Texans. There's no reason now or ever to back down from that stance, but he pulled his name out of the hat. I still think the Texans got the right guy at the moment. It's just, he needs to get the defense going in a really positive direction. We've got a couple of you guys on hold. We'll get you guys in here. 713-780-3776 on the HRMP listener line. We've got to Katie. Talk to JC. JC, what's going on?
Hey, what's going on, guys? So listening to the topic, I was a little bit taken, but I really think you guys are spot on as far as the expectations. I didn't walk in this season with expectations that they were going to win 7 or 8 games. I wanted them to compete and show improvement. And so far, they've done that in certain areas. The defense took a step back. But when we made these expectations, we were also looking at a healthy offensive line at the time. So that kind of changes things. When you got 4 out of 5 starters out of the lineup, that changes a lot. So, yeah. I mean, I give D'Amico a little bit of grace as far as that is concerned, but the defense has got to play better. They looked really great in the preseason, the way everybody was flying around. So we thought, okay, hey, maybe he's got them dialed in. But I really think with more time, more experience, these guys are going to get it together.
Thanks, JC. Appreciate it. I do think that's fair, that in the world where, like, we wake up and it's week 5 of the 2023 season and Laremy Tunsil and Titus Howard and Shaq Mason and I guess Juice Scruggs are 4 of your 5 offensive linemen, like, hopefully – that will be significantly better than where we are right now.
I mean, CJ, I wouldn't have picked them to win 7 games if I knew 4 of their 5 starting offensive linemen were going to be missing.
Of course, yeah. And, like, and look, and you know, I remember when DJ Bieniemy was on, I think it was with when he was on the Killer Bees like 2 or 3 weeks ago, he talked about when he had them as a top 10 offensive line, it was banked on the fact that you have Tunsil, you have Howard, and you have Shaq Mason, that 3 of your 5, like your core offensive line, was really strong, and that you can get away with having Juice Scruggs and at what we thought before the season, Kenyon Green at left guard. It's been tough. Like, C.J. Stroud has been the most sacked quarterback in the NFL. He's been sacked 11 times. I would guess, like, a majority of that, or at least 50% of that, is on him. I think he's holding on the ball. It's not like Deshaun Watson. I don't think it's to that. It's not to that extreme, but, like, there are still times where he needs to get rid of the ball quicker. But the offensive line is objectively terrible.
I do agree that he could get rid of the ball quicker, and this may transition us into another topic for another segment, but I put some of this blame, maybe even a majority of this blame, as far as the idea that he's holding on to the ball too long, onto Bobby Slowick. I mean, this offense, and we can get into it in another segment, we're up against it now, but his play calling has been probably the weakest spot on this entire team outside of injuries. We saw it in the preseason game, week 1 in the preseason against New England, when they had, I think, only Shaq Mason and one other starter. No, it's actually Kenyon Green and Juice Scruggs were the only 2 starting offensive linemen in that game, and they kept calling these deep pass routes and play actions. And we saw it again against the Colts, where 4 of your 5 offensive linemen are out, and you're still running these deep passing combinations, way too many play action. Plus, we can't get away from the play where Tank Dell, for some reason, was blocking on a screenplay. That's a play Bobby Slowick called. It's not quite the Wattcat that Bill O'Brien called in 2015, but it ain't good. So Bobby Slowick, kind of going back to the point of, are you starting to feel worried about D'Amico? I'm a little concerned that he hired an inexperienced offensive coordinator, someone who hadn't been an offensive coordinator before, especially when you're a first-time head coach. And I think some of that, and we can get into it later, but starting to show here with Bobby Slowick, because his offensive play calling has not been good at all.
All right, we'll get to Lamont on the other side. We'll continue this over. But also, I'm going to give you guys three options or three things, the expectations or where you think the Texans, Astros, and Rockets are going to end or be at when their respective seasons ends today. Which one would you feel most confident? We'll tell you those next. We'll get to your phone calls as well as the bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Insert random audio clip now.
And I got garlic and onions and peppers in my fingernails and in my eyes, and my skin was dry and oily at the same time. I had calluses on my fingers from the knives, and it was everything.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, you're back inside the bullpen with the producers from ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Wait, who let those guys up here? Security? That's them right there. Right there.
Joe George here with you on the bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here with you till 7 o'clock. BMAC behind the glass, as usual, or most nights, on Twitter, at Sacked by BMAC. I don't know what to do here first, BMAC. So I'm going to read, let's see, where'd it go? I'm going to read Lamont's text, and then I'm going to go to Lamont's call. I also believe the Texans can flip the Browns.
Wait, we have
now
a text and a call
from
Lamont?
Yeah, so Lamont texted us first.
This is like Lamontception? We got a text and a call at the same time?
So the first thing he said was that the Texans can flip the Browns. Yeah, that I agree with. Deshaun Watson, he stinks.
He was awful that last defense, night, and I loved it. Yeah. It was amazing.
The defense is really good. Actually, I was really impressed with Jerome Ford. But like, I think Kevin's
going to be an interesting pickup in fantasy.
Yeah, Kevin Stefanski, I think, is going to be squarely on the hot seat because of Deshaun Watson and the way he played. But like, that game was just, first of all, both those games
and
last night.
So you think he's going to get scapegoated because it wasn't his decision to bring in Deshaun Watson?
He is. The head coach is always going to be the one to get the blame.
That's rough. I get it, and you're almost definitely right. That's like, probably also, be what happened, but it wasn't his choice to bring it in. You could tell when that happened.
Jimmy Haslam. Baker Mayfield played bad defenses when he was in Cleveland, and he never once looked anywhere close to how he did this weekend. I get it. The Bears defense is an absolute joke, but like, Baker Mayfield threw for over 300 yards this weekend, and like, in a different system, he looked competent in his first game for the Rams last year. He led that late comeback win for them, and like, he did things consistently since leaving Cleveland that were like always better than they were with Kevin Stefanski. So like, I get Stefanski's going to get the
not
blame.
Even just Baker. Look at that season. Stefanski was the OC with Minnesota. That was one of Kirk Cousins' worst passing years as well. It might just be that the Stefanski offense, and you can't separate his offense from his head coaching ability because it's going to go hand in hand. It's kind of part of the job, but his offense just might be an old school offense that just doesn't make quarterbacks look good, because you got Cousins, you got Baker, you got Deshaun. There's three quarterbacks who have had success elsewhere who haven't looked good under him.
Yeah, well, I think Deshaun Watson also might just suck.
So yeah, he might also just suck now.
All right, let's go back up to the phone. 713-780-3776, the HRMP. Listen, let's go talk to Lamont in Mo City. Lamont, what's going on, man? How are you?
Hey, what's the deal with you guys? I think everyone is right. And, you know, I was one of those people who had high expectations. And I was pretty upset Sunday after the game. And I was going in on people.
I could tell.
But then I started, you know, after 48 hours, I started thinking about some things. And I'm going to give you guys two things. I qualify this by saying I believe everybody is right in what they feel. And they got the opinion to do that. But then I was like, okay, this is a division game. That's one variable right there. Put that one to the side. We know anything can go crazy in divisional games, no matter what the records are. Anything can go crazy with divisional games. But the biggest one for me was, are we probably watching an OC in Slovic who has D'Amico Ryan's number, period. You cannot tell me the defense that we've seen against Baltimore is all of a sudden trash now that they're going against the Colts. And where I'm going with that is, what happened last year? I know everybody want to bring up Brock Purdy got hurt, but that was DC going against OC. The DC, the OC put up 31 points in the national title game, NFC championship game last year, against D'Amico Ryan. It may just be as simple as Shiken is just a better just has D'Amico Ryan. It's almost like who was the player that Michael Jordan used to have a problem with, and he finally hit a shot? Was it Greg Elo?
Oh, yeah, Craig Elo, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it could be something as simple as that, because he's on D'Amico Ryan's. It could be, in other words, come Sunday, I wouldn't be surprised if the defense jumps back, but I just think that this could be leading up to a case where Sykin is just outclassing D'Amico Ryan's right now, and that may be just a hurdle that D'Amico Ryan's has to overcome. That's all I have, fellas.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it. You guys can get in here at 713-780-3776, the HRMP listener line, to call or text. Like, it is a fair point that, like, Shane Steichen is, like, if you were going to go, you know, boxing card, we kind of did this yesterday on the Killer Bees, like, he's up two rounds to none over D'Amico Ryan's right now. And where D'Amico Ryan's, I think, the biggest question you have for a coach like him, or any coach, is that everyone's always coming from a situation where, like, their talent is at an extreme level. Like, there is not a single player on the Texans defense that is pretty much as good as what San Francisco had. Like, there is no one near Bosa. There is no one near Fred Warner. Like, the talent level is obviously much different. So, like, how you adjust, you know, coaching elite talent versus coaching talent that's not as good will tell you a lot about it. Like, I will give Jonathan Gannon some credit that, like, what he's done through 2 weeks with Arizona, like, yeah, they're 0-2, but, like, I'm impressed with the Arizona Cardinals and Jonathan Gannon so far. Like, they have been way more competitive than I thought they ever could be with Josh Dobbs at quarterback. James Conner has played really well. The defense is playing. Look, they had a 20-0 lead over the Giants, and then I think that's when you saw their talent deficiency problem, even though the Giants aren't that much better than them talent-wise, probably across the board. Like, You go from a lot of talent to, like, a little bit of talent, and that's really when you find out who a coach is going to be. Will they bounce back in week 3? It's super important that they do, because if you do believe that the Texans can fight towards not having a top 5 pick, like, that bar is super low once again, but, like, if you're hoping the Texans can get 5 or 6 wins on the season, even if they lose this game versus Jacksonville, like, you need to see dramatic improvement. That you need to see, you know, the self-inflicted stuff that we've had to hear D'Amico Ryan's talk about for 2 weeks now, that needs to go away. Like, the penalties, in the worst moments ever, that needs to stop. That the run game has to be better on offense and defense if you want the Texans to be competitive this year.
It's tough because, like we were talking about in the last segment, I think week 1 against the Ravens, you saw D'Amico get to take a little bit. This is a little bit of it. I'm not trying to take credit away from Will Anderson or Jonathan Grenard, who were great in that and created a lot of it on their own. But you were facing a Ravens defense that was not as compromised as your offensive line, but they did have some problems there with injuries as well. So they looked great against that. You fast forward that, and now you're facing Shane Steichen, who you guys have pointed out may seem to have D'Amico Ryan's numbers. And Pauly G will like this reference, but way back when the Steelers-Patriots rivalry was really hot in the mid-2000s, the Patriots were kind of the first team to realize, you know what, we could just spread the Steelers' 3-4 defense out, make them take linebackers off the field, or make that linebacker cover a slot receiver, and we can slice and dice them apart. And it took a long time for the Steelers to adjust to that. So there may be just something there. You know, styles make fights, as long as we're staying with the boxing references. It may be just a styles makes fights problem for D'Amico with Shane Steichen, and he's got to make that adjustment to get back, you know, on the good side of it. But so I do think, you know, you're facing a compromised Ravens team. Shane Steichen may have your number. The truth is there in between. I think this Jaguars game is going to give us a big part of that answer, because it's a team with a lot of good weapons. Trevor Lawrence, Christian Kirk, obviously Calvin Ridley, Travis Etienne, a lot of good weapons on that Jaguars team, but it was a team that just scored 9 points the week before. So it's not on some super unbeatable offense that the Texans defense would have no chance against. So if they're able to do some things against the Jaguars, then I'll start to lean that it was the true Texans defense is more towards the side of what we saw in that Ravens game.
All right, so I got 3 scenarios for you guys of what you're most confident in to happen the rest of the year. Now, one of these is going to be very premature because the Rockets season has not even tipped off yet. But the Astros go to the World Series, the Houston Texans win 6 games, the Rockets qualify for the play-in tournament.
Wow.
Those are, like, if you had to pick one today that you think you'd feel confident in saying The Rockets make the play-in tournament. The Texans win six
games.
How many
wins do you think it would take for them to make the play-in tournament? Like 35?
2 years ago, I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, the Spurs got in as like the 10 seed at like 35
wins. I'm going
to
try to quickly look this up as you're talking. But my guess, like just thinking about it without actually looking it up, my thought was it'd probably be about 35 wins. Of course, the app I pulled up doesn't have last year's standings. It's already zeroed out. But I would, regardless, let's just assume it's 35 wins for the Rockets. So we're talking 35 wins for the Rockets, 6 wins for the Texans. Are the Astros making the World Series? I'm still going to go Astros make the World Series.
Yeah,
I think so too. The Orioles have no playoff experience. I don't believe in their starting pitching at all. The Rays, I don't know, the Rays are always kind of the team that looks good on paper and they fade down the stretch. The Astros have had the Rangers number and the Mariners might not even make it in the playoffs. Certainly, I would feel very I'd feel very pessimistic about their chances in the series, specifically up against the Mariners, because of how well the Mariners have played against the Astros. But basically, everyone else in the American League, I think I would pick the Astros to win that series. So I'll go Astros as my most confident, then Texans, then Rockets.
Yeah, it's the Rockets is, I think, the wild card in all this, just because we haven't seen them do actually.
If you lower that number to 30, I would take the Rockets.
Yeah,
second.
That's just boring.
I know, but like, 35 is a spicy number. Look, I believe in Ime Udoka. And I believe in some of this young talent, especially Jalen and Shingun, and hell, even Jabari really closed the season strong last year. But 35 wins is a tall ask.
Yeah, it is. It is a tall ask. But look, this team, like, if you look at where like the Rockets are in their rebuild, Jalen Green and Jabari Smith Jr. should absolutely be taking the next steps. Most rookies in the NBA, or like most young superstars in the NBA, they take their biggest leap in year two. So Jalen's clearly missed that boat. So like I'm at the point where like it's put up or shut up. It's you have a better coach, you have a better locker room around you compared to what you've had without Silas and hopefully without KPJ being there. Like Jalen Green needs to take that step. Like the superstar players go from year one to year two. They take that big leap right away. So like the Rockets making the play-in tournament.
You don't give a Steven Silas exception to that?
Well, that's why I think Jalen has to do it this year.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get 4 years to do it. So
no,
like,
I agree with that. You don't get four.
Like, if you're going to say, like, which one is the most likely, I still think it is the Astros. After 2 weeks, I'll leave the Texans at 6 wins and then the Rockets not making the play-in tournament. But the Texans are the one where it's just – I expected them to win this game. Like, I expected the Texans to come out and beat the Indianapolis Colts because I don't think the talent is that much different. And my biggest gripe – that D'Amico Ryan said after the game was he said that the game plan didn't change between what Anthony Richardson and Gardner Minshew was going to do. And it was the fact that they were going to do these short passes. Like, I agree, but
I think that's coach speak to a large percentage. Like, coaches never really want to give in and talk about how they would change their defense. They always want to present in their mind, they're presenting confidence that it doesn't matter what the other team does because we're confident in what we do.
Yeah, and look, but they, like he said, like their plan was going to be short passes, and that's how they're going to move the ball down the field, and they were going to run it, and the Texans completely failed to stop either of those things on the 10 short passes that Anthony Richardson made, and of course Gardner Minshew basically diced them up and looked like a competent quarterback in the NFL. I will say, I'm not going to lie, this is probably where I'm sure other people are going to say bad take. I've never hated Gardner Minshew as a quarterback. Like, I think he is literally like he's the next Ryan Fitzpatrick. Which is
as
like,
in what, plays 15 years in the league?
Yeah.
Okay.
And just like starts for a bunch of teams.
Someone that's a great answer every day on immaculate grid because he's played for half the team
in
the league.
He's the guy that like Gardner Minshew will probably not be an Indianapolis Colt next year, and he'll be the starting quarterback or in a quarterback competition with whoever drafts Caleb Williams. So he'll be like an Arizona Cardinal next year or, you know, a Chicago Bear. And then Caleb Williams will take over, and then Gardner Minshew will just do the same thing like Ryan Fitzpatrick did and make like way too much money. Best job in the world, backup quarterback. Like Ryan Fitzpatrick, that guy, great job. He got to play a little bit. He had a cool nickname, like Fitzmagic. Everyone loved him.
Yeah, that time
him.
In Tampa you where got, he wore the chains and had the chest hair hanging out. It was a good time.
Like you got Minshew mania. Could he do it for the next 10 years? Like that's a great life. Like,
no joke. You know, I couldn't do it as much when he was here because he wasn't good enough to get the Texans where they wanted to be. But Ryan Fitzpatrick is one of the most enjoyable players I've watched over the last 20 years. I don't necessarily want him on my team, but I thoroughly enjoy watching him play football.
All right, we're going to do Hot Seat Watch. We're mostly going to focus on college football in this segment, and we're going to look at the local teams. We'll include even Dusty Baker on this. But we're going to do Hot Seat Watch, a new segment we're going to do on Tuesdays. That's next year on the Bullpen on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Dude.
Like I told my last wife, I says, honey, I never drive faster than I can see. Besides that, it's all in the reflexes.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Bullpen, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Final segment of the Bullpen here on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. I'm Joe George. We'll be back tomorrow at 6 as well. And, of course, I'll be with the Killer Bees at 3. I almost said noon, but we haven't been there for like a month now. Most Soccer Matters coming up next with Glenn Davis. But last thing, and we're going to try to do this on, I think, on Tuesdays. We're going to do Hot Seat Watch. Just because I think there's a lot of coaches in and around the city of Houston. And like when I say around, like we're going like 3 hours away for some of this. But I want to focus mostly on college football. We're going to start with your school, BMAC. University of Texas, they're number 3 now, I think, yeah, in the AP poll.
They are the number 3.
I think the gut reaction of like Steve Sarkisian hot seat before the season was probably like a 4.
I would agree with that. Yeah, he needed to take a step forward. Yeah. Otherwise, he would have been on a real hot seat the season after.
So right now, like today, I would say it's like a 1.
Yeah,
but I would put it at a 1. But you could also sell me on, and the reason why, I heard someone say this, or it was me and my buddies were texting about UT, and he was like, Steve Sarkisian's seat has never been hotter. Because now he has like elevated the expectations for the University of Texas this season, that they are going to be a college football playoff team, and if it falls apart and he ends up with like a 2 or 3 loss season and they end up outside the top 10, nowhere near the college football playoff, that people are going to be even more pissed than they were if they just lost to Alabama.
Man, yeah, the win against Alabama certainly does change the script, because like I think if you told most Longhorn fans and alumni that, hey, we're going 11-1, but you don't tell them, you know,
the one loss,
where the one loss comes from, then yeah, they're like, okay, great, you know, let's Arch Manning the year after, and we're, you know, everything's moving forward in the right direction. But if you tell them, yeah, you're going to beat Alabama, but then like let's just say you lose to Oklahoma State, that changes the thing, everything as far as the mood around the team. I think most fans would still be of the mindset that everything's pointed in the right direction, certainly would change what. I don't think it would necessarily change the hot seat, but it would definitely change the mood around the team and for the fans. But I will say, so I agree with you. I think currently Steve Sarkisian is at a 1. But this may just be because of what you're talking about, or it may just be the reality of college football in 2023. He's at a 1, but he's one loss away from like a 5.
Yeah, well, that's what college football is so crazy. Because like even like
Jimbo, you go out and lose to Kansas, yeah, and that's what keeps you out of the college football playoff. Then you immediately get like doubled, tripled, quadrupled up to like a 4 or 5.
Yeah, and I'll say this. I think I'm pretty confident Steve Sarkisian, unless like the worst season ever unfolds starting this next week, he will be the head coach of the Longhorns entering SEC play next year. Like, I feel very confident in that, that like that's where they're headed. And I frankly, like, I always like Sark. Like, obviously he had to deal with his personal demons when he was at USC, but like I liked his offense when it was at Alabama. I think he's been pretty consistent overall, and I think they're going to be in the college football playoff this year. Like
I do too.
Have them there before the season, but it's just one of those things.
The Big 12 just isn't that good.
No, it's not.
I mean, Houston doesn't look good right now. I'm sure we'll talk about them in a second.
Let's just go there.
Oklahoma, I don't think is very good right now. They're not as good as that record shows. I mean, there's just not a lot. Look, they've played down to their competition now 2 out of the 3 weeks against Wyoming and Rice. So they could certainly play down to their competition against Kansas State or Kansas or whoever it happens to be. Kansas State is not a bad team. I'm not trying to say they're like Wyoming. But they could play down to the competition and slip up. But on the field, on paper, Texas should win every game on the remainder of their schedule going into the college football playoff.
Yeah. U of H, Dana Holgorsen. This is a weird one. Because I really I wonder the likelihood that they would buy him out of that
contract. See, that's
contract.
The problem. I would say just upon merit, it's like an 8.
Yeah.
But his relationship with Tillman Fertitta that I've heard, plus how much is left in the buyout, I would say that maybe stamps it down to like a 6.
Yeah. It's a reality.
Man, you can't lose. It's one thing losing to TCU, but that Rice loss is going to haunt him.
Yeah, look, it is the one factor that is hard to know about professional sports and college sports. Like, everyone, I think, intelligently thinks that Brandon Staley is probably on a hot seat in the NFL. But if you look at the history of the Chargers and the Spanos family, they don't fire coaches. They wait until their contracts are over because they're so cheap, like, they don't want to do buyouts. Like, they just do not believe in doing that. So the idea that Brandon Staley could be fired is almost similar to like Jimbo Fisher. Like, if you want to move on from Jimbo, just yes, the Aggies have like Aggieland has a ton of money.
Aggies could pay that off. I agree with you on the Chargers though. I could see the Chargers letting his contract play out.
And that's kind of where I'm at with Dana. Like, I think that it's more likely that his contract will play out. And also, like, I don't know.
Do you think moving into the Big 12 buys him some time? Like, because everyone expects growing pains?
It depends on what the other teams do. I do think that plays a factor. Like, if Cincinnati...
Even the most rabid U of H fan, couldn't have expected UH to come in and start dominating the Big 12 like they were doing the AAC.
No, but there are a couple things that will factor in. The first thing is University of Cincinnati, UCF, and then, what was the other one, BYU?
BYU.
Like,
yeah, BYU.
How they do in the Big 12 will make a big impact right away, but the outside pressure will continue next year. Like, next year is the one where I think you'll have the most fan outrage is as primetime joins the Big 12. Not saying that, like, he could have been University of Houston coach, but, like, the way the transfer portal works now in college football, we've seen all these schools turn everything around so quickly. Like, the university
that is going to change the level of patience.
Yeah,
I
really wonder how long coaches will get. It's always been kind of a short leash of like 3 or 4 years. I don't think it will go down to 2 or 3. But look, Deion Sanders, Lincoln Riley, like we see these coaches come in and like they pull all these players from the transfer portal. I'm still in my position on the transfer portal is I still hope that stops at some point. That like. I do hope that, no offense specifically to JT Daniels, but like players like him never exist again, where they play for.
You want to go back to the 1 year wait?
I think you should. I've never backed down. Like, I think you should only be allowed to free transfer if your coach gets fired or your coach leaves to go to a new school.
I agree with that. Like, yeah, I didn't mind the 1 year wait.
Yeah, besides that, I think the 1 year wait should still apply. I've always felt that way. Like, I just don't think the idea of not playing is like just free right, or you give them one free transfer. Like, I'm fine with that too. Like, I'm fine. Like,
but you can't change every single year.
Like, the JT Daniels thing is, it's like, don't want to pick on you, man, but like, you're on your fourth school in like, what, 5 years? Like, it's really kind of bizarre, like, how much they let this guy play. And then there's the kid from North Carolina, the wide receiver, who they stopped, Mays or whatever it is, they stopped him from transferring to North Carolina. It's just bizarre. So, like, I'm like the same, like, I think in theory Dana's like a 6 or a 7. I think the diehard Cougar fans would say it should be higher, but like a lot of it will depend.
I think you just got to be realistic about the buyout.
I don't.
We got about a minute left. We kind of
D'Amico.
We won. They're not gonna come on. They're not gonna fire.
I know.
I don't even want to say part of the reason why they won't fire him.
I'm
but
just
we,
being a
we
troll.
All know like, the dynamics here. He's not being fired after year one.
But like they've done it twice.
Well, they've done it, yes, but Joe, that caused some problems that they're not going to deal with again.
Whatever. Those people are idiots.
Well, we mentioned it, Jimbo. We got to give a number on Jimbo. I mean,
Jimbo is
that loss to Miami was ugly.
Yeah, I put him at like a 5. I think that him giving up the play calling
buys him a year,
a little bit of life, and like honestly, Connor Wigman looks really good. Like I actually think Texas A&M, like they're. They could have a really good season. I think Jimbo's a 5 because I actually kind of believe in Texas A&M probably more than I should. I'm one of those suckers that like
the buyout plays a factor, but I do think they left the Big 12 years ago because of the relationship with the Longhorns and Longhorn Network. Now Texas comes in, if they're coming in as a team that gets to the playoff,
yeah, that changes.
I think that dials up the heat on Jimbo quite a bit.
All right, here's BMAC. You can find him on Twitter at SackedByBMAC. I'm Joe George. You can find me on Twitter at Joe George Radio. I'll be back tomorrow at 3 o'clock with the Killer Bees and at 6 with the Bullpen. Soccer Matters with Glenn Davis is up next.